number of years ago from New York as a nationwide effort to share with the Rabbanim across the country and even in other countries, in Canada, that the communities across America should review the laws of Taras HaMishpacha, laws of family purity, at least once every 2 years. I think last year my wife had occasion to learn with the women, and so it's our turn this year that we share the halachas with the men. The halachas with regard to the women, I imagine the presentation was more detailed in terms of certain aspects of preparation that are not as relevant to the man to know. And so therefore, I've chosen to highlight a number of the simanim in Shulchan Aruch, a number of the pertinent halachas that we deal with, that we interact with more frequently, though there's some basis of understanding that you should have in general about the issues of Taras HaMishpacha in its totality. But the focus of our presentation will revolve around a few of the basic principles and halachas that we directly deal with all the time. I have thought in preparation of this class to not only share the technicalities and the halachas that are pertinent to the men, but also to use this opportunity in general to use it as a platform to sensitize ourselves once again to not only, again, the halachic issues of Taras HaMishpacha, but the emotional and psychological issues as well that surround the proper observance and care that has to be given to these halachas. The halachas of Taras HaMishpacha, the laws of family purity, are one of the foundations of Jewish law. Taras HaMishpacha, these laws that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, are written in the Svarim, HaKadoshim, the Holy Svarim, that aside from the fact that I imagine the laws of Taras HaMishpacha are fundamentally a chok. It is a statute, it is a mitzvah not different than the mitzvah of kashrus. If somebody were to ask you what is the rationale and what is the reason, the real reason for the mitzvah of Taras HaMishpacha, it is the real reason is the same reason as there is for kashrus. It is a chok. A chok means it's a mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us b'li tam. Fundamentally, it's not a mitzvah sichlius. It isn't like the mitzvah that thou shalt not kill. It isn't like the mitzvah thou shalt not steal. But rather, at the core of it, it's a chok. It's a mitzvah like parah aduma. It is a mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us as a, I would not say as a test, but rather as a mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has kept the reason to himself. However, even within chukim, there are reasons that are offered to try to give us an understanding and an appreciation by which we ourselves will be able to observe it in the midst of comprehension as well. And so we offer reasons for chukim as well, and in fact they are Torah hashkafis as well, they are Torah-based as well. The concept of the mitzvah of Taras HaMishpacha, as it is written, is also to enhance the vitality of the marriage. The whole concept of marriage is rooted in the fact that there is to be understood that in a Jewish marriage is a never-ending ability for continual growth. As it says by Avram and Sarah, that when the Malachim, the angels, came to Avram, to the tent, they asked, Aye is Sarah Ishtecha, where is Sarah your wife? And so Avram answers, Hinei Ba'ohel, behold, she's in the tent. This is when the three angels in the disguise of regular travelers come upon Avraham, and Avram sees them as regular people. And so they ask, where is Sarah your wife? As you always ask, do you have a wife? And so Avram says, Hinei Ba'ohel, behold, she's in the tent. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia asked, is it not that indeed the angels knew where Sarah was? The Gemara's assumption is that they didn't just ask it as a mere formality, as a matter of etiquette, but rather it was asked out of a sincere desire to know, and in that context the angels surely knew already. So Rashi says, quoting the Gemara, the purpose for which they asked is the Chava Bala. Its intention was to make Sarah more beloved to Avram, because by asking the question, by posing the question, and in turn that Avraham says she's in the tent, it was an expression of her modesty. And the reason why she was not to be found on the outside was because that is her custom, that is her dignity, kavudu bas melech pnima. So Avraham Avinu, given the opportunity to articulate once again the distinction that is Sarah's and the woman of valor that she is, again brings to his consciousness the great and treasured Eze Kenegdo that he has. And what is its purpose? Kedei l'chavav al bala. This would create greater love for Avraham towards Sarah. That means the Malachim, at the behest of the Almighty, was sensitized to the fact that there is not only a never-ending wellspring of potential that exists within the marriage, but indeed that it was incumbent upon them to utilize the opportunity to give enhancement to this relationship, as great as it was, to even strengthen it and ever make it more intimate and beloved one to another. I have never had a Shaila that has come to me in almost 25 years of Rabbonus, that anybody has ever come to me with a Shalom Bayis question that has not been an issue of conflict. Invariably, when they say, the matter is a matter of Shalom Bayis, I want to call you up about Shalom Bayis, it usually connotes something that is of a negative entity. There's been a fight, there's a misunderstanding, there's a disagreement, whatever it might be. But it always carries with it something negative. You see from here, not so. Shalom Bayis was not an issue of something that's negative. It could also be that somebody should call up and say, I'm having an anniversary, and because of Shalom Bayis, Rabbi, I want to ask you, what is the best thing I should get for my wife? How, in which way should I approach, you understand, my wife, or vice versa, that in order that I should maximize the opportunity by which I should be able to utilize this particular moment in time to its fullest? And anything less than that would be also losing an opportunity of enhancing Shalom Bayis. And so in the context that we will present this class this evening, there are issues that we can talk about that do not have to focus on problematic areas, but rather to give credence to those things that could facilitate and enhance what we are doing, to heighten and to sensitize us to maximize our opportunities of Shalom Bayis. In the relationship between a man and a woman, the dynamics of a man and the dynamics of a woman, as you well know, are worlds apart. The psychology as the physical aspects of it, so too the psychology is totally different. And what is meaningful and what is important to a woman is not necessarily those things that are closest to heart for us ourselves. And so in order to be able to fully meet and to utilize the opportunity by which the halachos of Taris HaMishpacha should be given full expression in its total sense, the psychology and appreciation of what our role and responsibility is, psychologically and otherwise, is essential to the performance of the obligation of the mitzvah onor that we have. We are required by the ksuva to be able to have relations with our wives. That's our obligation. That's one of our chiyuvim. Just as we have a chiyuv to sustain her, to clothe her, to feed her, we also have an obligation to have relations with her. Those relations is not a perfunctory act. It isn't a maisa behema. It is not something that we do instinctively, compulsively, without cheshbin, without consideration. But as any mitzvah that we go do, it should not be mitzvahs anoshim lumada. Just as we do any mitzvah, we are not to do it by rote, without thought, without preparation, without kavana. And so too the mitzvah onah, which is incumbent upon us, which we are required to do, I dare say that we have an obligation to do it in its proper and full measure, with kavana, with thought, sensitivity, caring, and concern. Now, the mitzvah onah, when a woman prepares herself, you know, for her, this is an extremely important time. You know, we are not involved in the hachanas. We are not involved in the preparation, in the count, you know. It is quite unsettling for a woman. I have to handle the shaila, so I know. And you deal with it, you know, individually. There is nothing more difficult for me that when a shaila will come that I will have to tell a woman that it is not good. Amara, a woman will send a shaila, and husbands should encourage their wives to go ahead, you know, and present shailas to the Rav. There are different ways it could be done. Some wives send it through the husband and the sensitivities of it, and you know, but Vinishvi, whatever it is and however the medium is done, they should be encouraged. I have had shailas that sometimes for years women thought certain shailas were not good until they came to a class and they learned to ask. And in retrospect, how many opportunities were lost as a result that shailas were not asked. When I learned by Rabbi Feinstein, I was privileged to sit with Rabbi Feinstein, and we saw 1,000 maris, 1,000 shailas together. It was myself, it was Rabbi Nyman from the yeshiva, the Mashgiach Chofetz Chaim. It was Rabbi Ida, came in from Lakewood, and Rabbi Shmuel First came in from Chicago. And every single Thursday, we would have shailas from different parts of the country that came for Reb Moshe's review and for teaching us, you know, what's good and not good. Parenthetically, you know, once I had a shaila, when Reb Moshe didn't know us well yet, and they brought him a particularly difficult shaila, Reb Moshe looked at the shaila and says to Rabbi Bluth, who was his secretary then, "This shaila we will have to talk about privately." This was not even for us to hear what the halacha of that was. I saw it to be pretty close to red. And Reb Moshe was obviously extraordinarily adept at this. He had great plates, great shoulders, you know, and could have passed in great shailas. Reb Moshe taught me one day to tell a woman, instead of going to the mikveh, let's say even a shaila on the first day, that you'll have to say no is a shas hadchak gadol. or Shashat Chagodumin, but extremely, you hear, pressing matter that you have to give your attention to, and that you would have to be matir if there's any way that you can find hetter for such a thing. That's what he charged us. And he used to tell us when they used to bring shilas from Lakewood, he used to tell us there are two Torahs. There's a Torah in Lakewood and there's a Torah out of town. He told me out of town is a different geder, and told us how for Lakewood in New York to paskin a shilah, and how to paskin a shilah for Silver Spring, Maryland. That was his Mesorah, and that's what he taught us. So one day was an enormous issue. And so the appreciation of the importance of the relationship, you know, between husband and wife, that even one day, you know, should be lost, is a matter of great concern, is a matter of great sensitivity. And so the woman is the one that has to make the preparations. She has to go ahead and check. And at least behooves us that if the time draws close, first of all, that we should have a sensitivity that the time is coming close. And somehow, you know, to interject somewhere, as one might suspect that it's coming closer, that we should share our own anticipation, our own expectation and desire, and to say, when might you be going to mikveh? Now, sometimes we don't know exactly the day. But nevertheless, if there is an awareness, there is. So she has a sense that you're also looking forward to this opportunity. It's meaningful for you as well. And then, obviously, you know, to do something, if possible, special, you know, when the time comes, to be able to express, you know, your understanding, in a sense, your appreciation, you know, of that, of her own preparation, and that your own personal desire, that indeed when she does come back from mikveh, that is indeed an occasion and a time that you feel is very special. This to a woman is extremely important. It cannot be calculated. During, the halacha brings down that during relations, one should not speak. However, if one is engaged and speaking about matters related to one's love for one's wife or related things, that's part of the mitzvah, that's part of relations. Part of relations is the environment, the atmosphere, you know, the communication. You know, those are part of the sensitivities that the halacha respects and that the halacha expects us to be able to go ahead and offer, you know, during this time, and to be aware, you know, of the needs, you understand, that it should not just be a perfunctory physical act, but as we have come to learn, the verbal communication, the expressions to our wives are very, very essential to them, more than just the act itself. And so those things that are part of it, that lead up to it, you know, are things that have to be administered to, and that is part and parcel of the mitzvah, the enhancement of the hidur mitzvah. You spend money for a hidur mitzvah, you spend money for a $50 esrog, a $100 esrog. This mitzvah is a hidur mitzvah. More so than just the time and sensitivity that has to be given to the relations itself and the sensitivities with regarding to that, and to meet her need and to be sensitive to what she wants. You know, women is kavud bas melech penima. Women have a difficult time in articulating what they want. They're not going to do it so easy. A woman of sensitivity, it's not her tchuna to speak. She will not say Rochel Bitcha Haktana. In other things, she's very verbal. But when it comes to this sensitive area, women sometimes are uncomfortable to express themselves and to say what their needs really are. It requires us to elicit that expression and to express our concern and interest to try to bring her the pleasure that indeed she is entitled to, and with that to be able to elicit and to be able to discuss things that she might want. And of course there are halachic issues related to this again that every rav here does in fact deal with. And so if it seems to you to be something that seems a little, unusual, Lashon Sagi Nahar, then those things, should be brought for consultation if in fact that is appropriate and proper. Now there is latitude in this, and of course I must tell you, the issue of Shalom Bayis and those things that promote peace in the home and bring, a sense of excitement to the marriage, given certain circumstances, shailas must be asked, and there is latitude within halacha, sensitive, to the circumstances of each individual's couple's needs. So please just have that as an idea, as a concept in your mind. One of the areas of great sensitivity and halachic scrutiny is, of course, the time when a husband and wife is not permitted to each other. When that time, when a woman becomes a nida and is prohibited to her husband, somehow that is a most trying period, even more so than when the times that a husband and wife are permitted to each other. It is somewhat awkward. The halacha does expect us to have a certain sense of discretion. A woman is supposed to dress a little bit differently in the evening. Our expressions and the speech that we have should not be provocative and suggestive. But could a man say to his wife, "I love you," during the time that she is not permitted? What is the nature of their engagement, the nature of their discourse, the nature of their discussion, the nature of their conduct and behavior? Obviously, I must tell you that sometimes women are even more sensitive during this period of time when they are, in a sense, halachically estranged from their husband and require to have that reinforcement and that sense, of love and needing and that sense of warmth and concern. And so again, that must be administered properly. That must be felt. That must be communicated. And the halacha will accept that. There is shalom bayis, even then, of course, without question. And it could be done, you understand, with an extra measure of concern. It could be done, with a certain type of a look that doesn't necessarily have to be suggested. It could be by promoting or doing certain things for her. I don't think there's anything wrong to send flowers or whatever else there are. To be ever aware, to utilize the opportunity to create, this environment and this feeling that even during this period of time, which the physical intimacy does not permit, that indeed the halacha will accept and will embrace and will accept this type of feeling and this type of expression during this period of time. But gentlemen, everything needs seichel. Everything needs discretion. Everything needs good judgment. One of the things, for which Taris HaMishpacha and the laws and the restraints that were encoded in this mitzvah, of course, communicate something that's very important. I would say, if somebody were to ask me, what is the foundation of Shalom Bayis? What is the underpinning of it? I would say more than anything else, it's a matter of mutual respect. It's a matter of respect. That, I think, is the psychological and the foundation of all marriage. To respect the other person. More than love. The respect, and from the respect will come the love. And there is a respect that the halacha recognizes and understands and imposes on us that, unlike the behemoths, animals, that whenever they impulsively want, without seichel, without intellect, driven by impulse, they cohabitate. We don't do that. We respect certain boundaries. We respect certain boundaries about the woman. This is a time that is not permitted for her. And so we go ahead and we withdraw and we restrain ourselves. And that is the foundation of the entire relationship between a husband and a wife, the appreciation of this respect that we have to have for them, and that we ourselves have certain restraints as a result of that. And of course, obviously, also there's the renewal of the relationship, that when indeed you understand the halacha permits us to have relations, it creates a heightened sense of awareness and again permits us a certain measure of intimacy that we were not permitted before. If there are any questions that you might have with regard to any of these particular things or things related to, you know, the implementation of this, I would be happy to take any questions now if anybody has anything to contribute or would want me to elaborate on anything that I might have said. Okay. We will discuss this privately, gentlemen. I also want to just, you know, mention that it would be particularly advisable during the time that a husband and wife are not permitted to each other to be complimentary, to utilize the opportunity, you know, there are other communication other than just physical contact. Complimentary and things of that nature will in fact go a long way in solidifying the relationship. Let me review just some of the halachos of Taharas HaMishpacha to give you the overview. A woman becomes anida, spiritually impure, not physically impure. It's called spiritual impurity. Becomes anida on the onset of either her period, or as you might know, when a woman will have, even if she doesn't have a formal period, there is a principle in halacha that any time a woman sees a discharge of blood, that cannot be determined, the source and origin of that blood, even if a woman is as Cana, is already past her period, she is in menopause, the halacha is that the woman is a nida. It could be as a result of just a natural thing that just happened. It could be as a result of an exam that a woman has taken. That is a shaila. Different types of examinations will create, you understand, different types of issue of blood. As a result of that, the question is how far does it go? And does it the cervix? Is it the uterus? Different parts, how the instrument, all those are halachic questions that are dealt with, you know, in great detail. And at that time, the amount of time that the woman will be required to count will be never less than 12 days. 12 days, 5 days are mandatory, and after the 5 days that are mandatory, then goes in the phase two, which will be what we call Shiva Nikiyam. Shiva Nikiyam are the 7 clean days. Never less than 12. There might be on occasion a shaila that might be brought to the Rav of a woman that has great difficulty in conceiving, and therefore the time of her ovulation might come out a bit earlier. Is there anything to be done that these 5 days could somehow in some fashion, you know, become less than 5? Now, if a woman is for those 5 days continues to bleed or stain, there is nothing in the world that can be done. It is impossible. At least I have never heard anything in the world that can be done about that. It only becomes a shaila, and it becomes something of halachic discussion if, in fact, a woman on the second or third day, or maybe even the fourth day already, has stopped bleeding, and then is it necessary to wait the fifth day as well. That's a shayla that must be brought to a rav, and under very extenuating circumstances, perchance maybe there is material that is written about it where something might be done to alleviate possibly one day. But that is under really a shas hadchak with a woman that has great need and there are child problems about having children and all of those things. But those things are aware, just you should know that within the halachic process that there is certain flexibility that we are able to give, you know, given these unusual circumstances. We have 5 days. At the end of the fifth day, the woman, what she does is she makes what's known as a hefsik tara. Hefsik tara means that thing that is a hefsik, means there's an interruption between that which is tame during the times that she is halachically, you know, defiled, you hear, spiritually impure, to the time which is what? The 7 days, which will be called the Shiva Nikiyim. Please take note that there is a matter of discussion that this Hefsik Tara should never be done beyond Shkia. And you have 2 minutes after Shkia, the most outer limit. Rabbi Feinstein writes in his Tshuvas, 9 minutes after Shkia, if a woman forgets. But the world has not accepted 9 minutes after Shkia. The world has accepted the most that we are able to give latitude are 2 minutes after Shkia. I must tell you, during the course of a year, I will get approximately 10, 15 shaylos of women that will call and that miss the Hefsik Tara by Shkia. And so I don't know what you can do about that. It's really not your asek. You're not the one that even knows when she's making the Hefsik Tara. But just, you know, just by matter of review, if they ask you what you learned tonight, please underscore the importance of meticulous the care to the time that the Hefsik Tara has to be done. Why lose a day unnecessarily? And then, so we make the Hefsik Tara, and after the Hefsik Tara comes, what do? It's a time of what? Shiva Nikiyim. There's a time of 7 clean days. Now, please let me just go through it very quickly. A woman will be able to see what is considered day and night, according to Halacha. Sunrise and sunset is considered day and night. It has nothing to do with Shabbos. It has nothing to do with Tefillah. Tefillah, davening, when does davening start? You can start davening, you know, Balos HaShachar. Of course, there's a din of tefillin, there's a din of tzitzis, Mishe Yakir, so we wait. So it's what, 60 minutes before what? Neitz HaChama, before sunrise. But as far as the halach is concerned, what's day and night? That goes by what, gentlemen? That goes by sunrise and sunset. If a woman will see this evening, 1 minute before Shkia, 1 minute before sunset, that's called day one. And so if today is Monday, she already has Monday, so it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday before Shkia, what does she do? She makes what? Her Hefsik Tara. Just interesting to know, at a time when a woman will experience on a Friday the need to make Hefsik Tara, and they bring in Shabbos early, it would be best to make the Hefsik Tara before they bring in Shabbos early. If you make an early Shabbos, so they should try to make the Hefsik Tara when it is, you know, at that time that it is the early Shabbos, even though what? Even though it is not yet what? Yeah, nightfall. It is not what? It is not the evening. Usually the Hefsik Tara is made, you know, closer, as close you can get to what? To Shkia, to sunset, at the end of the fifth day. But if we're going to bring in Shabbos early, it should be done earlier. My recollection is correct. I did receive shaylos about this. What would happen if it's after? Would it help? The answer was, I think that it does help, as long as it was before Shkia. So even though we've accepted Shabbos, but the sun has not set yet. And so therefore, one would still be able to make a Hefsik Tara. I did see bring down that some people say to make 2 Hefsik Taras. make one hefsek tara before what? Before she lights candles, and one hefsek tara to be done before what? Before shkia. But if you make one, I think before the before she's mekabel Shabbos, that would be fine. Okay? Then what do we have after that? Yes. She should not make it, if possible, not more than an hour and a half before, why do you call it again? Before Shkia. Okay? Now, what do we have after that? Then we have, Shiva Nikiyim, the seven clean days. That Shiloh is very prevalent. And then a woman should ask a Shiloh. Let's say sometimes, a woman is teaching. A woman is at work. And she can't get away. She can't make a Hefsek Tara. She has to call and ask a Shiloh. When do you make Hefsek Tara in those circumstances? That's a shayla that she poses to the Rav, when she has great difficulty. How early in the day could she make Hefsek Tara? Will it work in the morning? So there's a lot of scrambling. But we will just talk about the lechatchilas. We will not talk about, the complications, okay? But a shayla should be asked. With regard to the halach of the Shiva Nikiyim, we count Shiva Nikiyim. Right, the next day starts the Shiva Nikiyim, the seven clean days, and then, at the end of the seventh day, how many bedikas does the woman make during the Shiva Nikiyim? Woman makes two bedikas during the Shiva Nikiyim. Two bedikas during the seven clean days, one in the morning and one before Shkia. And here, of course, the halacha is extremely sensitive and aware that there are multiple problems that exist with somebody that has to sometimes make two bedikas. Sometimes it is difficult because there are physical problems that a woman, continues to stain, or at least not to stain, but the bedikas, don't come out good. There could be irritation. There could be other problems. And if there are a history of problems, a rav sensitive to this and aware, sometimes we'll prescribe, maybe one bedika. Okay, that is not l'chatchila, gentlemen. Should be two bedikas a day. And in extreme extenuating circumstances, if you're familiar with the literature, you will see sometimes they will even not only prescribe one bedika a day, but sometimes under very unusual circumstances, sometimes even a bedika every single day will not necessarily be called for. I would like to tell you that I have received a number of shaylas about a situation where sometimes two bedikas are called for, the first and the seventh, and a woman will say she missed the seventh. Starts all over again. I received a shayla not long ago, not from this community, but from another community, about a woman that was given one and seven and missed the seventh day. She only had to do one and seven. She missed the seventh day. So she said, could I do it on the eighth, the next day? The answer is no, because you can not have an interval more than the one and the seven in between. And then when you miss that, she not only was not yotze, but that the halacha would be that she cannot not only not make it up the next day, but she has lost the entire thing. And really, for all practical purposes, though there is a shita that's matir one day, but that is on an arach hashulchan, but that's under very rare circumstances and one that would not be applied to this situation. And so therefore, please take note that that's something, that Rabbanim deal with all the time. I've received that shayla many times. And, of course, again, I tell you, they make impressions on me because I have to be the one to tell them that it's no good. And, obviously, it's with great, feelings of, distress even sometimes, that these things have to be so done. And so the halacha would be, again, on the seventh day, the woman at the conclusion of the Shiva Nikiyim would then go to the what? Would then go to the mikveh. The halacha with regard when the woman prepares for the mikveh, we will not go into necessarily all the preparations and the aspects of the preparations in particular at this moment, but just be know that when the woman has to go to the mikveh, there is different shailas with regard if she goes to the mikveh on a Friday night versus she goes to the mikveh during the week, or she goes to the mikveh on a Saturday night and the halachas of the preparation on a Friday afternoon that accompanied that because of Gzeirah d'Rabbanan, and how a woman has to prepare Friday afternoon, or if it's a three-day yontif, she has to prepare the day before the three-day yontif in preparation of what? Going at the end of the yontif. And so all of these things, you know, are factored in and are issues in terms of the proper preparation for the woman during this period of time. One of the issues in halacha that you might deal with are the halachas of what would be considered a mara. Now please, let's just review quickly. A woman in two ways could become, you know, a nida. Either there is a discharge and there's a sensation and there's a feeling, there's a hargasha, which would be a Torah matter. If there's a hargasha, a discharge, that's a Torah thing. Then there would be a rabbinical thing, and that's called a kesem. What is a kesem known as? That is a stain. A woman is not, you understand, the blood does not come from within, but it is observed where? Yeah, on, let's say, an undergarment, and this would be called a kesem. A kesem is a stain. A woman that makes a bedika, checks, internal check, that could be a sofik doraisa, because there could be a hargasha, there could be a sensation, and the checking itself, the manner in which it's done, could simulate a hargasha sensitivity, and therefore any bedika, any internal check, no matter how big or small that mara, the appearance of that discoloration is, would be asur if the color was not prohibited. So a woman that makes a bedika inside and then takes it out, even if it's a tipas dam kachardel, it is the amount of blood that is much as a mustard seed, the halacha says that the woman is what? The woman is asur if that color is no good. That color is no good. That's a suffix doraisa. However, if in fact it is a kesem, it needs to be the size of a what, gentlemen? A penny. The Moshe, I would see many times that Shilas would come to him and he would take out his trusted penny. And he would look at it with his penny. And it is connective dam that is the criteria of the penny. In other words, it doesn't have to be round, but the total area of the connected color, if in its totality is the area of a penny, then it would be no good. But if you have two areas, and only if you combine them together, but they were separated, two islands, but not neither one of them is the size of a penny, is mutter. It's permissible. Saisor and Moshe sometimes judge whether or not, you know, a particular area is real color or it's just an extension of that color. It's not really the color. It's the color that starts to run a little bit. And he would say that that's permissible, he told us. And he asked, once said, what does this look like to you, gentlemen? He took out a penny. I want you to know, it's not easy to find a kesem that is the size of a penny. And many shyless women will call, and I would ask them, take out a penny. It is very hard, and it's very, you have to sometimes imagine, because it's long and thin. And these are things you have to be familiar with, because you're going to be the ones that bring over to Shilas. And if it's not, it may not be the penny, and you have to see. And one time, Reb Moshe took out the penny, and he looked at it, and he said, you know, I can't tell. It's so close. So what happens, gentlemen, when it's so close? What's the halacha? Safik the Rabbanon Lekula. It's a rabbinical issue. And it's a suffix. He says, I can't determine it. It's too difficult. It's too close to call. And so he said to us, it's mutta. Don't worry about it. It's all right. That was a practical difference between if it's a doraisa or it's a derabbanon, suffix derabbanon lekula. To be familiar with the colors, you know, somebody brought into Rabbi Feinstein a color chart, Sherman Williams, and said to Reb Moshe, please, could you mark off all the colors? And asked, that's, you know, Reb Moshe, you know, and he had to deal with all these lunatics, you know? So they asked him to go ahead and mark off, you know, the color chart. Reb Moshe said, this is not a matter of color chart, Sherman Williams. It's a matter of feel. It's a matter of texture. It's a matter of experience. It's a matter, you know, of sensitivity. You know, Rabbi Gussman, who was a Rosh Hashiva in Netzach Yisrael in Brooklyn, was in the Beis Din of Reb Chaim Oza, and he said that he saw with Reb Chaim Oza 50,000 maris. 50,000. I remember once Reb Moshe went ahead and looked at a mara. He looked at it and he said to us, Ich weiß nicht, was das ist. You know what that means in Yiddish? I don't know what it is, but blood it isn't. He says it's mutter. I can't know what it is. One time he came to us, he told us, this looks starts like lipstick, he said to me. This is not dam, this is lipstick. And so he was matter it, you know, because he knew from experience, you know, that this is not a maradam. I do tell you that there were times that I saw Reb Moshe Feinstein matter red. And he said, I can tell the difference between certain types of red that are mutter and certain types of red that are not. When I left Reb Moshe 22 years ago, I was able to tell that. I lost it since then. Of course, I lost the chush. I didn't see a number of years in Buffalo, too many. So I lost that sense, you know, a little bit, you know. Of course, wouldn't do like him. But there was a time, you know, when I remember the type that he used to tell us. But there's room, you know what I mean, within the halachic process, you know, to be able, you know, to see and to appreciate, you know, the sensitivity of the different colors. Please understand, Rabosai, what might appear to a woman to be alarming and not permitted, many times is permitted. And it would have to be a severe shaila and have to be something very significant and substantive in order to be able to aser and to prohibit. So many times I would say, of the maris that are brought to me, I would say maybe one out of 20 are no good. Of the shilas that I handle, I would aser one in 20. One in 20, I would say, is aser. Okay, so your chances are pretty good, you know? Okay. I would like to utilize just that. I just have a few moments now. Does anybody have any questions about this they would like to ask? Does everybody understand at least the sequence and the time of the matter, you know, of how the cycle works and how the process of permissibility is? Okay, let me just review with you quickly. I have exactly 5 minutes, and I will just start a little bit. One of the areas that I wanted to talk to you about that you should be aware of, and things that are most relevant to us, are the halakhos of the harchakos. The chachamim put into play because of the importance and the sensitivity of creating boundaries during this time, that there are certain physical acts of intimacy that we are not permitted between husband and wife. You will see a consistency within the halacha that the man is much more vulnerable than the woman. When a woman is sick, there's a different halacha than when the man is sick. When the man is sick, the woman is allowed to do a lot more things for him than when the woman is sick and that he's allowed to do for her. Because being the man, you will see in halacha that the chachamim were afraid that he's more vulnerable. He's more spontaneous. Let me give you an example. What is the halacha with drinking? You understand, for man, a woman has soda. And you want to drink from her cup. Are you allowed to drink from her cup? No. What do you do? How are you matir it? How is it permissible? What?
She drinks first.
Not she drinks. No, that's true.
I mean.
How do you do it? The woman has a cup. How do you do it? Are you finished? The halacha is if it's poured into another glass. Or if somebody drinks from that glass that's hers, give it to your kid. And then you drink. It's permissible. but you cannot drink straight from what she drinks.
But she's needed.
Right. Or she has a cold. Yeah? But what would be the halacha with regard versus vice versa? If who has it? If the cup does not belong to whom? To her, but the cup belongs to him. What's the halacha?
She can have it.
No problem. She can go ahead and take it straight and drink from it. Halacha is permissible. It's mutter. What about the shirayim? What about leftover food? Could she take from his leftover food? Yes or no?
Yes.
Right. What about the other way around?
No.
Right? Could he take from hers? No. What about taking his food, her food, and putting it into another plate? What's the halakha? Say it?
Yep.
No. It doesn't help. It only helps by what? It helps by liquid. It does not help by a what? It does not help by a solid. Okay? The Chachamim understood this. These are sets. It's beyond me because I don't understand it. You know how this makes a difference. But this is intimacy. Sitting on the bed. Is a man allowed to sit on the bed of his wife? Could our wife sit on the bed of her husband? Yeah. It's a different world. How does this work? Chmesnish. But they knew. Yes.
The wife didn't lie on the husband's bed?
Yes. I think if he's not there, yes.
But he can't do that if he's in the room, right?
No.
Right.
The wife cannot sit on the husband's bed.
I have to go over that, but I just want to bring, yeah, we will go into a greater detail next week. I just wanted to bring up this nekuda. What, there's other shaylas, not only in the room, but what would happen if he's out of town? Is there a difference if he's in town or he's out of town or she's out of town? Could they go ahead? Are there different halachas? Those are different issues. Very important halacha, and I just have another few minutes, about food. If you have her go ahead and you have food on the plate and she doesn't want her potatoes, are you allowed to partake of her potatoes? Yes or no? You have a steak meal, you go to Le Trois.
Sure.
And then you hear, and then she says, you know, she takes the steak and takes this and potatoes she doesn't touch. You say you want the potatoes. Are you allowed to take the potatoes? What's the halacha? Halacha is it's okay. You could take the potatoes, you don't even take it straight. You're not allowed to take from the same plate. But you're allowed to take from a centerpiece, a bowl, and then take it from that and put it onto your plate. There's a whole discussion Reb Moshe Feinstein has, and I don't know, Reb Moshe's of the opinion that if you have a challah roll that belongs to what? That usually is consumed by how many people? One person. Reb Moshe is a thing that you really shouldn't split that into two. Or a bottle of soda that's really normally made for one should not be what? Give that both should partake of during this period of time. That's how far the sensitivity, according to Reb Moshe, goes with regard to what? These halachas. What about butter? Are you allowed to take butter from a butter dish together directly and put it onto the butter? Are you allowed to, yes or no?
Yes.
Who said yes? You sure? Halacha is Reb Moshe writes in Igros Moshe in the first chelik that you're allowed. You're allowed, whereas, because naturally I would imagine that's the way it's done. You understand that you do that. Yes? What? You're not even allowed to throw the salt at her. Halacha is you're not allowed to throw anything to her. There is a shayla in halacha, you understand, if it's over, you know, not if it's straight, then there's no shayla, that's out. There's a discussion in Pisrei Tshuva, if you throw it, you hear, you know, higher than her, and that whether or not, according to some, it might be mutter. Then there are shaylas about handing about the baby. How do you do the baby? You know what I mean? That's a serious shayla, you know? I will tell you that in certain homes where tznius is extremely important, I saw by my Rebbe that my Rebbe would never ever hand his wife anything. In 18 years of being in his house and seeing him all the time, I lived in the house for years. In front of other people, the Rashi would never hand his wife anything.
Even when it
be mutta. Why? So people should not know when is mutta and when isn't mutta. I don't think that the halacha requires that. It was his sense of tznius that understood that. But I could hear it. This, Jeff, I hear. This I could hear. I can touch that. I hear that. Okay? Just one other quick halacha. No, that I could hear that, whereas the other things I can't hear sometimes. You know, you ask me, do I hear? What's the difference between the man and the woman?
Oh,
you know what I mean? So I'm just saying this I hear. You know what I mean? I comprehend it. You know what I mean? It's not just because, you know, he did it, you know, but I understand it, that the tznius says he doesn't want to publicize, you know, the time that him and his wife, you know, are permitted to each other. You know, so that Ehrlichkeit is right. That's hearable. I just want to mention the care that has to be taken at the time, you know, if you're sitting at a table together, and especially when you're first married, then there has to be halachas, you know. It's a time of eating, that there's an intimacy. Do you know that? It's an intimate occasion, eating. So what do you have to do at such a time? So there has to be a hecker on the table. If there's somebody sitting at the table, then there has to be no differentiation. It's fine. But if it's a time that a husband and wife are not permitted to each other, something different has to be put on the table. Then you put a vase, maybe, or you put different colored placemats. Her husband has one, and the wife has a different one. Or he has a placemat and she doesn't have a placemat. Something has to be different, or you invite an orach, you invite a guest. But other than that, there has to be a hecker. And then when the woman serves, how is she supposed to serve? Usually she serves with which hand? The right hand. How is she going to serve this time? She would serve with the left. Or she would serve at a distance away from him, not in front of him. And so, again, the halacha is sensitive that there are certain times during this period of time when there is a heightened sense, you know, of relationship, of intimacy that requires halacha guidelines in order to protect, in order to be able to keep, you know what I mean, this, you know, keep it together. There are going to be halachas, Neitz Hashem, next week that we will talk about. I would like to talk next week about the halachas, about a woman singing during the time that she's not permitted to husband. Is she allowed to sing Zmiris? Don't be nervous, Jeffrey. We're going to do good. Don't worry, Jeff. Jeff, don't get upset, Jeff. I didn't bring it up the end. I'm not going to scare you away now. You know what I mean? So we will talk about those halachas during this and many other halachas with regard to the harchokas we will talk about when the husband goes out of town. I'd like to talk to you about going to the mikveh, whether or not if this kind of comes up when the husband's out of town. Does the woman... Yeah, is there an obligation? Should the woman go to mikveh when her husband's out of town, not going to be back that night? Shaila comes up quite often. What is the halachas with regard to that? I'd like to speak to you about those halachas regarding that. I'd also like to speak to you a little bit about things that you have to know about the setting of the calendar. A woman's vestis. You know, very interesting halachas with regard to that, when a woman does not have a regular cycle and how those things play, you know, and we deal with that all the times. Because there are certain times during the month that even when her period doesn't come, that she is not permitted to us. I'd also like to talk about what should be our conduct and what are the prohibitions during those days. What types of intimacy is permitted or what type of intimacy is not. The kissing and holding and this. And we don't want to be more machmir than the halacha. And we sure don't want to do more than is required and necessary. So we'll talk about the parameters of what is appropriate conduct and behavior during those periods of time as well. So may Hashem, hopefully next week, we will continue and go further, and we will do more of these halachas. And if you have any other questions, please be prepared next week to ask. I'll be more than happy to entertain your questions. Thank you very much, gentlemen.